This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Memorial Day, and while many of us will celebrate the unofficial start of summer with a trip to the mall or to the beach, others prefer to spend at least part of this day in remembrance. On a day set aside to honor those killed in America's wars, an American soldier died today in an ambush in Iraq, an as-yet unidentified member of the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment. He was killed at about 120 miles north of Baghdad at about 6:15 this morning. For his family and friends, for his buddies, Memorial Day will always hold special meaning. But whatever day it was, the men and women who've served remember absent friends today, along with their friends and families. For all of them, national celebrations can provoke deep and often conflicting personal feelings about war and what it means to fight and die for your country. Today we'll be talking about the difficult business of remembering our nation's wars from the point of view from those who've fought them. We want to hear from you. If you've lost comrades or loved ones in war, tell us what you're doing today to honor their memories, or share with us the feeling that this day evokes. Who do you remember on Memorial Day? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now by phone is Anthony Principi, Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. And Mr. Secretary, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
It's good to be with you on this day, Neil. Thank you.
The official purpose of Memorial Day, I mean, there are so many veterans issues. Honestly, sir, we hope you come back and talk with us about them at another time.
Certainly.
This is not the day for that, is it?
No, it's not. This is a profoundly emotional day for Americans, certainly for me, as I was at Arlington National Cemetery with the President and Secretary of Defense, Don Rumsfeld, and with some of the families who lost their loved ones, husbands, daughters, brothers, sisters in Iraq. You know, it's a reminder of the priceless gifts we're given in this great country, but that they come at a terrible price, and that is the loss of brave young men and women, as you just indicated.
I've found myself on this day in the past covering ceremonies like that, and it's hard not to look at the children, isn't it?
It really is very hard. You know, some of the families were at the White House before we went over to Arlington, and some of the young mothers with infants in their arms. And it was very emotional for the President, Mrs. Bush, and for myself, and Secretary Rumsfeld. And it's just, again, you think throughout history, you know, World War II and Korea and my generation in Vietnam losing so many good friends and classmates in the Mekong Delta, and then again, Iraq One, and now again, and men and women they're just willing to sacrifice their lives so that not only all Americans could be free, but people who are oppressed in distant countries. And so it's really as you indicated, it's so much more than the beginning of summer. It's really a day to just pause and just remember the great benefits that we have been given.
You have a lot of institutional responsibilities on this day, and I know you're going to be busy all day long. But I wonder if you take time out to remember your experiences. You fought in Vietnam yourself.
Yes, and I do remember. And you know, some of those images come back home on days like today when you're with the families of those who were recently killed in action. And you know, and I lost a lot of classmates from the Naval Academy, and I lost several men in my river patrol unit in Vietnam. But for the grace of God, I came home. There were others who did come home, but, you know, they came home to be honored in a national cemetery such as Arlington. So it's a very sad day for me, and it just conjures up images of days that I'm pleased are gone.
In your role as secretary, I know you can't pick out individuals, but in your role as a veteran, is there somebody in particular that you think of on Memorial Day?
Well, I think of my father, who is a World War II veteran. You know, like so many others, he's an immigrant to this country. Did not speak very good English, but as a young man, he went off to fight for his adopted country. And I remember going out to Bethesda a naval hospital recently to visit with some of the wounded, and I'm just reminded of the great sacrifices of some of those young men and women who were, you know, just really wounded terribly, or they had given their lives in the cause of freedom.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. I know this is a difficult day and an important day for you. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having this show today.
Anthony Principi is the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and he was with us by phone from here in Washington, D.C., and also joining us for this program as we ask you for whom you remember on Memorial Day. Again, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address, totn@npr.org, is Tim O'Brien, the writer perhaps best remembered for his books about Vietnam, of course, a Vietnam veteran himself. And Tim O'Brien, it's good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me on.
As you think of Memorial Day, who do you remember?
Well, like your previous guest, I first think of my father, also a veteran of World War II, served in the Navy in the South Pacific, Iwo Jima and Okinawa. A man now, you know, in his late 80s. I took him to a kind of a patriotic song fest a few weeks back, and they called on everyone in the various branches to stand up, and this teetering old man managed to get to his feet, lean on his cane, and stand up through all of Anchors Away. And a memory like that it makes you smile, but it also makes you remember.
Did you and your father talk much about his experience of the war?
A bit, not a lot. As he gets older, the memories seem to come back much more strongly for some reason. As a young kid, I don't remember my dad talking about it at all. But now that his memory is beginning to fade of other things, the war still stands out. Not the ugly stuff, but the friends, the fraternity, the comradeship. Even the terror takes on kind of a, in his memory at least, a kind of comedic aspect. You know, he'll talk about it laughing at how frightened he was. Wars make a lasting impression on human beings, as any kind of tragedy does.
Well, your experience in Vietnam clearly had a tremendous influence on your writing. It's the central role of your literary experience and our literary experience with you. Is that wrong, or are we wrong to judge it like that?
No. Vietnam made me a writer. It intersected with a long-time desire to write. I'd wanted to be a writer from the time I was a little boy, but didn't really do it until, you know, the Vietnam collided with this desire to write, and suddenly I found myself having to write and not just dreaming about it.
In your novel, In the Lake of the Woods, you write about how the war memories of one Vietnam veteran evolved over time. I wonder, at this remove, how many veterans do you think can trust their own memories?
Not many. In a way, a war is kind of like a childhood. Images remain of, say, a sandbox or of an enemy bunker, but a great deal gets erased. And in the end, you probably forget a lot more than you remember. And you're left with a kind of collage of snapshots, a young face smiling at you, a drill sergeant snarling at you, moments of raw terror, succeeded by an image of you know, camaraderie and wistfulness, maybe writing a letter home. But you're in the end left just like looking through an old album of photographs, and anyone who has had that experience of looking at photographs doesn't remember much of what preceded the taking of the snapshot or what followed the taking of the snapshot. You're left just with the snapshot.
Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255. And let's go with Peter, who joins us on the line from Oakland, California.
Well, hello.
Hello.
You keep asking folks what this brings up for them. Of course, it brings my father to mind. He was in the Army Air Force in World War II. And like your guest who was just on, when he died last June, he didn't remember anything, but some of the last memories to go were of his military experience, which was really seminal. what I wanted to remind people of was, it's something that's interesting to me. My father was a communist, and he was a communist right up until he enlisted, at which point the Communist Party told everybody they had to renounce their membership in order to enlist. And at the time, the Army was recruiting communists as indoctrination officers for their new recruits, because they were the ones who could explain the history and the politics of the war very clearly. And so he was not such an officer, but he became an officer and went around the world installing early radar in bombers throughout the war, end of the war in China, and then came home and after a few years was blacklisted and couldn't find work for many years. I grew up with having the FBI come to my door and ask my sister and me odd questions, and so it was an interesting juxtaposition. I just want to remind people that patriotism is not blind obedience.
Peter, thanks very much. And your father, you say, passed away
this last June,
a year ago.
Yeah. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Good discussion.
And will you be going out to visit him today?
I have pieces of him here. I have his ashes here and in another place, so I visit him.
Peter, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Tim O'Brien, as much as, you know, it's interesting talking to you and to Secretary Principe and to this gentleman, Peter, who just called. In a way, our father's experiences are so much more valid to us somehow.
Well, I wouldn't say more valid. There's a kind of odd sympathy that one feels when you look at an old man whose memories have collapsed around, you know, these few images of a war so long ago. And one can't help but have sympathy for it. It's hard to have that kind of sympathy for yourself, especially when you're, you know, not that old. I do want to echo endorse what your previous caller, Peter, just said, is that patriotism is not blind obedience. Socrates talked about it in terms of wise endurance. That is a certain, yes, you're brave and you try to show courage, but you show it with wisdom. Just because you're a soldier or a former soldier doesn't mean you erase your own conscience or your intellect. And that's easily forgotten on a day like this.
And just because you're in uniform and have been trained to fight does not mean you're necessarily brave either.
It certainly doesn't.
So much about what you write in your books, and I particularly remember the things they carried, had to do with why it was that people found themselves in that place and in this particular war in Vietnam.
Yeah, well, I mean, I myself went to Vietnam fresh out of college. I'd been opposed to the war. I'd rung doorbells for Gene McCarthy, a peace candidate at the time, and thought of myself in that now devalued word as a liberal. And yet, when the draft notice arrived, I found myself pulled two different directions, as a lot of young men are, and that's easily forgotten, too. On the one hand, I didn't want to die in a war that I thought was ill-conceived. But on the other hand, I came from a small town in southern Minnesota. My dad had been a sailor in the war. My mom had been a wave. And so I felt pulled toward Vietnam in one sense and pulled away from it in another. In a kind of, in a way, a sort of, as if I had been split open.
We're talking about Memorial Day with author Tim O'Brien. Is there a way that you honor and remember veterans today? Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later in the program, we'll catch up with Syed Mustafa Al-Kazwini, the imam at the Islamic Education Center of Orange County, an Iraqi American who's been on the program several times over the past several months. He'll share his impressions of American efforts in post-war Iraq. He's just returned from there. But now we're continuing our discussion about Memorial Day and the ways our soldiers and civilians remember those who died during wartime. Our guest is author and Vietnam veteran Tim O'Brien. Of course, we want to hear from you. 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And Tim O'Brien, I sort of cut you off just before the break. You were talking about the reasons that you and others ended up in Vietnam, and you talked about being torn between the cultural push of your dad and your mom, who both were in the service in the Second World War, and your politics, which said you didn't really want to die in a war you didn't necessarily agree with.
That's right, and I think it's easy to forget that sort of thing after the years go by and get a little nostalgic about it all. Very few of my comrades in Vietnam wanted to be there, preferred that they be there. They would have much rather been back home, you know, getting married and having children and doing those sorts of things. What sends men to war is not always patriotism or dreams of glory or adventurism. Oftentimes it's simply a terror of embarrassment, fear of having one neighbor say to another, "Did you hear what the O'Brien kid did? The sissy went to Canada or went to jail." And the impulse that sends men to war, I think, oftentimes is not really noble, but rather to preserve one's sense of reputation, to read in the eyes of your friends and family a kind of respect. And in my case, I'm afraid I went to war for reasons that were not those of my conscience or my intellect, but rather a kind of terror of humiliation or embarrassment.
Let's get back to the callers. Our next caller is Randolph, who's with us from Eugene, Oregon.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
I really have a lot of heartfelt respect for the guy who's on your show right now. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name.
It's Tim O'Brien, but that's
just
okay.
What he was saying. Yeah, Tim O'Brien. The reason he went to war wasn't, truthfully, the reason he really, you know, felt in his heart. And I think in America, we need to really reflect back on how we got this country in the first place and how the cavalry, you know, killed many, 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 many millions of Native Americans. And I think we should think about how we got this country in the first place and what we're doing out in the rest of the world now. And I think mostly we should remember the innocent victims of war, which is, you know, they're the ones, they didn't even want any part of it in the first place. I love my country and I respect it, but I don't like what's going on, and I just feel it's cowboys and Indians all over again. Basically, no disrespect to the Indians, any indigenous people. And I'd also like to say we still don't know how many victims there were in the Iraqi war on the Iraqi side. We don't know how many Iraqi people died. And I think that's a big deal. You know, we only had like roughly 100-something Americans, which I feel terrible that we lost any of them. And I watched the McNeil-Lehr report every night to see the Americans who died every day. And I wonder if George Bush ever loses any sleep over any of those people or, you know, the Iraqi people who died. And I'm just really upset about...
Randolph, excuse me.
The way our world is going.
Randolph, excuse me. We did want to talk today about the people who have... served and the people who were killed. It was not a day to discuss veterans issues. Let's not refight the war today.
Okay, no veterans issues.
Okay.
But how about the victims of war and not just military victims?
No.
How about civilians, innocent civilians? So many have died on this day. What's the memorial to those people?
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Lamar, who joins us from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hello, Neil.
Hello, how are you?
Pretty good. I'd like to remember my father, Sergeant Pershing Wadsworth, 2nd Armored Division, World War II. Daddy died at age 83 last fall. Just in the last couple of years that he lived, he got to where he could talk about some of his experiences in the war. Talking earlier about reasons men go to war. Dad enlisted in the Army in 1937 because he was out of work. Cotton mill at Aragon, Georgia went down, and he enlisted in the Army, took his basic training at old Fort Oglethorpe up near Chattanooga. And then when Second Armored was formed, he became part of that. I remember when the movie Patton with George C. Scott came out, it wasn't so much that Daddy wanted to see the movie. He felt an obligation to go see it just to make sure they got the story right.
What did he think?
He was very impressed with it. He said that George C. Scott had Patton down right.
Yeah,
he was very impressed with the movie.
When he finally spoke of his memories of it, though, with you, did his memories, you know, seem cinematic? Did they seem as if they might make a good movie?
They really did. I was just, you know, blown away with the vividness of his memory. He had a huge picture of his whole company at Fort Benning in 1942, right before they went overseas. He could go down the line, call every man's name, tell you what state he was from, if not what town, and ones that didn't make it back, he could tell you where and how they got killed. His memory was better at 83 than mine was at 23. It was just, you know, stuff I think was just so seared into his mind that you know, that he couldn't forget it if he had wanted to.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that with us, Lamar.
Thank you.
Appreciate you calling us. Joining us now is Tony Taylor, a veteran and director of the Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Treatment Program at Bay Pines VA Medical Center. He's on the phone with us from his office in St. Petersburg, Florida. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
How important is public recognition of Memorial Day to veterans?
Neil, I would say it is of the utmost importance. What we're talking about is honoring the sacrifices of those persons who have paid the ultimate sacrifice. And not only is, if we look at our veterans on Memorial Day, but I think each and every day that we live, you know, we owe our veterans this gratitude and this kind of honor and recognition.
We were just speaking with somebody about his father, who said until the last couple of years of his life didn't talk much about his experience in the Second World War. Is that unusual?
I don't think so. I think a lot of veterans have a difficult time talking with anyone about their experience, because I think they'll tend to be ridiculed and people will not believe some of the horrors of war. I think we look at the motion picture depiction of what war is all about, but that's not quite always the case. And I think our veterans have a difficult time just talking with anyone about their experiences. We found it to be very therapeutic when they do, but getting them to that point is quite the challenge.
And I don't know if a lot of it, but, you know, there's at least an element of it that our experiences of warfare don't really match up necessarily to what we've seen in the movies or read about in books.
I agree 100%. Our program, we have a program here at Bay Pines, our traumatic stress program. It's been around since about 1981, and we have heard a wealth of stories that almost goes beyond my imagination about some of the experiences that I have actually experienced in the military.
You served yourself.
I served in the Marine Corps in Vietnam. I'm a Vietnam veteran.
And I wonder, how does your combat experience or your experience in the Vietnam War, how does it inform what you do now?
It plays a large role. When I returned from Vietnam, I didn't have any obvious physical wounds. And so growing up in Jacksonville, Florida, in a family that prided itself on work, it was my job to go to work. And I enrolled in college and pursued a degree in psychology. It was after that I came in contact with the VA's Readjustment Counseling Program and got involved in helping my fellow brethren deal with the effects of Vietnam and post-traumatic stress. And I found that to be very therapeutic for my own PTSD.
You have it as well?
Absolutely.
How does it manifest itself?
Well, I guess it's times like this, Memorial Day or Veterans Day, when I tend to get a little depressed and a little melancholy about when I can reflect on some of the experiences I've had and some of the guys who did not have a successful readjustment back into coming to the world, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it every day. I see veterans who have not made the overall transition back to, you know, to the real life. And it just gives me great pleasure to work at a program like here at Bay Pines where we have that kind of commitment to helping veterans make that readjustment. And that's very helpful to me.
Well, Mr. Taylor, thank you very much for doing this with us.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Tony Taylor directs the Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Treatment Program at Bay Pines VA Medical Center in St. Petersburg, and he was with us from his office down in St. Pete. And Tim O'Brien, no obvious physical wounds. That seems to be a lot of what you write about.
Yeah, I mean, I was wounded in Vietnam, but the greater wounds are spiritual and emotional. On a day like Memorial Day, so easy to fall into the rhetoric of nostalgia and sentimentalism, words like sacrifice and so on, and all that's true, of course. But former soldiers not only carry with them glorious memories and memories and prideful memories, but most of us who served in combat carry with us memories of great guilt and responsibility, of failure, of acts of personal cowardice, of acts of, in some cases, atrocity. And it's so easy to fall into a kind of sentimental rhetoric on a day like this when the truths are much harder and much uglier. The person who just spoke, for example, when you talk about post-traumatic stress, you're talking about memory, and memory not of nice things, memories of death and so on. And I think it's really important not to spend a day like this just glorifying men who have served in combat, but talking about some of the tougher stuff, the things we all carry in our souls having gone through an experience like a war.
The things they carried was in many ways a story in one book that was collectively a novel, but the things they carried, of course, in their backpacks, you described those, but you also described a lot of the emotions they carry.
Yeah, you carry that stuff not just in the war, but you carry it through the rest of your life. Anyone who has gone through it, any sort of trauma, divorce, or a dead father, or breast cancer, whatever it might be, you carry that, the baggage of that, through the remainder of your life and into the afterlife. And it's not all nice. Some of it's pretty ugly. And I think it's important, in fact, critical on a day like this to remember that. There are always great reasons for war. There are great reasons for people to kill other people. But the upshot of it all for the man who's gone through it or the woman who's gone through it is a memory cluttered with some pretty hideous stuff.
We're speaking with author Tim O'Brien, and here are some of the headlines today from NPR News. President Bush marked Memorial Day with a speech at Arlington National Cemetery, and the Israeli cabinet has approved the U.S.-backed roadmap to peace in the Middle East. The roadmap includes a call for the Palestinian Authority to crack down on militant groups. It's not yet clear that the authority has the means to do it. You can hear reports on those stories later today on All Things Considered. Right now, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is John, who joins us from Portland, Oregon.
Good morning. It's still morning out here, about 11:30, and about 30 minutes ago, our National Guard has flown over a number of our cemeteries and memorials, Willamette National on the east side of Portland, and over the Vietnam veterans here in Portland, and down to Wilsonville and And, of course, the Guard is down at McMinnville where the evergreen spruce goose is. So we have a lot of memorable things happening today. But what I wanted to touch on for a moment is some of my memories as a former serviceman, a prisoner of war in Europe and Germany. Those memories and what brings back that to me. Every 5 years we go over for the Normandy celebration. We're there in 1940 when President Reagan spoke and said we came to Europe twice in that century and took the spoils of war, which was ground to bury our hallowed dead. And that's all we ever really got out of it. So that was a big contribution by a lot of people, not just in Europe, but in the Pacific and other theaters of war. Each one of the things that happen in a memorable way, I think it brings a lot to me. At Saint Laurent, which is right above the Normandy beaches, above Omaha Beach, a cemetery which has about 8,000 of our hallowed dead, along with General Roosevelt, are these crosses. And we have those beautiful white crosses and Stars of David in this white marble that you can barely read. You've got to get an angle to read the names of those young men and some women who are buried in those cemeteries. And the tradition we've developed is to go down to the beach, if it is at Normandy, get a bucket of wet sand, bring it up, and rub it on the face of the cross or Star of David with the soldier's name and home state and so forth on there, and then brush it, and then it glows in the sun like it's a gold, embedded gold in there. And in a few days, the wind blows it off and the rain blows it into the ground. That sand, in our tradition, has the blood of our valiant soldiers, sailors, Marines, and so forth. The other thing that brings back that memory to me is the same thing is done in the interior cemeteries. As an example, at the Ardennes Cemetery in Belgium, near Liège, about 7,000, 5,000 to 7,000 of our dead are there. They take the sand from the rivers about there. Again, for the same purpose, it's just a tradition that's carried on. And I had, being a former POW in Stalag Luf IV, Stalag Luf I, the Dulags in the works, Gdansk, old Danzig, I've had a lot of experience working with the MIAs, having been an MIA a couple of times.
Yeah.
And at the Ardennes, in concluding here, my biggest memory is going there and looking for a friend of mine who was there, and I knew was there. The superintendent took me through the cemetery. This was about 5 years ago.
And very quickly, if you would, John.
Yeah, and in that cemetery, I thought all the Battle of the Bulge people would be there. 60% of my Air Force people who were shot down between 1941 and 1945. Those are the missing that no one ever saw.
John, thank you very much for the call. And I know you didn't intentionally misspeak when you said you were there with President Reagan. That was obviously in 1994.
Oh, I beg your pardon. He was a lieutenant. Not a captain. I beg your pardon.
94.
And he became president if you read your history.
Thanks, John. More after a break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, we'll kick off part one of our Law and Order series, exploring the American legal system by talking about circumstantial evidence and the role that it plays in our nation's courtrooms. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're continuing our conversation about Memorial Day and the challenges of remembering war. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@npr.org. And with us is author and Vietnam veteran Tim O'Brien. And Tim, listening to our callers who tend to remember the Second World War, there's such a difference in how the wars are received politically, I think, after all this time.
Well, certainly there are such different wars. My memories of World War II come mostly from the movies and from a few stories from my dad. And there are, by and large, there are stories of great heroism and personal sacrifice. The stories that come out of Vietnam have a kind of upside-down Alice in Wonderland-ish quality to them. It was a war that was not uniformly supported, to say the least, here in the United States or abroad. We came out of Vietnam a loser. I know that a lot of veterans who hear that word will be on the phone instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of it is we lost the war. Even in the smallest ways in Vietnam as a common foot soldier, one could see the war being lost. You couldn't find the enemy. The enemy was above you and underneath you and blended in with the population. There were no clear-cut battle lines. We weren't heading for Tokyo or heading for Berlin. We were essentially, as foot soldiers, going in circles looking for a kind of hummingbird sort of enemy, one we could never find. And so, of course, there are different sorts of memories. There are probably as many wars in Vietnam alone as there were soldiers in Vietnam. One's memories of a war will differ based on your job. If you were a general, you saw one sort of war. If you were a private, you saw another. In the end, I think what Memorial Day for me is all about is a kind of celebration of memory and of story, not a celebration of war.
Let's get one final call on this subject. Don joins us from Portland, Oregon.
Well, thanks, Neil.
Sure.
I am a World War II historian, and I've interviewed hundreds of these great men and women over the years who have, particularly World War II, Vietnam and the other wars, I haven't focused so much on. But I've seen the memories, I've seen Tim has talked about fade over the years. There was one fellow that I met with every Tuesday, almost like the story, Tuesdays with whoever. And I saw his memory of the great events that he participated in, the Battle of Midway, fade so much to the point that in the end, his last year of life was 1999, he was interviewed by a fellow who wrote a book on the Battle of Midway. And in the book, some of the facts have changed from the first stories I heard in the early 90s, and they were actually incorrect in the book. On the other hand, there's a fellow here in the northwestern Portland or Oregon area that was one of the Band of Brothers that we saw on television and in the book, whose memory is so sharp that I have, when I check anything against anything he says against any factual account of where he was and what he did, it's absolutely correct. So it's all over the board on these on the memories, but I also wanted to make a point as to why some of these fine gentlemen went into the service in the first place. I have never found one story or heard one story that is not a patriotic one, and that was that these people went into the service because they wanted to fight for the United States of America and felt a great patriotism to do so. And those that didn't go in right after
Pearl Harbor,
and, you know, were delayed because they were too young, just couldn't wait to go. I'm sure there are ones that, people who were drafted who were reluctant to go, and I know that's true, but I just have never come across these people. So that's all I wanted to say. I sure appreciate your dealing with this subject today.
Don, thanks very much. Appreciate your dealing with all that history for us.
Yeah, thank you. I just went up yesterday to the Boeing Air Museum and met some of the great men who were on the Doolittle Raid in 1942. They've gathered up there for a Memorial Day celebration.
So it's remarkable to believe they're still alive. That's terrific.
Well, there are, I think there are like, out of 90 men in that mission, I think there are, I'll say 25 probably still living. But, of course, the ones that attend these sessions like yesterday are the very healthy ones and the sharp ones, and they're it's hard to see that their memories have faded too much. I also wanted to make a comment as well,
quickly, if you would, Don.
Yeah, sure. That the some of the organizations that I deal with have actually addressed the fact about how they have been reluctant over the years, up until about a decade ago, to organize and tell the stories to their families or their friends or to each other. And I think it was like the 50th anniversary of the war when a lot of the history was being revised, that a lot of these people decided it was either now or never to set the record straight, and they began to talk.
Okay, Don. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Right.
And Tim O'Brien, we wanted to thank you for being with us today.
Great pleasure. Thank you, Neil.
Appreciate it. Tim O'Brien, a veteran of the Vietnam War, has written several books dealing with that conflict, including Going After Cacciato, of course, In the Lake of the Woods, and The Things They Carried. He joined us by phone from his home in Austin, Texas.